pass, and it was Daniel. Oh, what about that?
Pajero! Oh, you beauty!
They think it's all over. It is now.
Guys, welcome back to episode 8 of The Drop Ball. I'm here with Adam Westwood and Joe Ash, but no Nathan Harden. What's he up to? That's what I want to know.
I've no idea.
No one actually knows what he's
doing.
No
excuse. Weren't working last night, like some of us. Weren't not working last night, like some of us. He was just sat at home.
Yeah.
I woke up late and I'm still here. Yeah. I'm still here.
Yeah. Well done to the boy. It's a shock, but we're going to get on with Kosovo versus England first. Built on the back of, you know, a victory 7-0 over Montenegro, but we want to talk about this one first, most relevant. And it was pretty, you know, inexperienced starting 11, in my opinion. You know, you had Pope, Mings, Hudson-Odoi playing, and the midfield, in my opinion, was experimental as well. We had Oxlade-Chamberlain, Rice and Winks, which formed a three-man midfield in a 4-3-3. But, you know, never really had too many threats from Kosovo, except for the early chance that they had, which you might say, against a better side, might punish you. Still a bit of an issue from set pieces.
I think that kind of helped. That kind of comes into play with the inexperienced team. There was a lot of players getting either their debut or one of their first few caps in this game against Kosovo. So I think defensively, I don't think we were as stable as we were against in other games, such as against Montenegro.
Yeah, and I've been really impressed by Chilwell. Wasn't as impressive in this game, but he's still. It's been mentioned what we said last week about, in my opinion, how Rose deserved to kind of get faded out now. Bringing in Chilwell, who's, like we said, him and Pereira at Leicester are forming the second best partnership in the league of fullbacks, you know, behind Trent and Robertson. So I think it's only fair that he gets the chance, and we saw that, you know, two impressive performances, two more caps. I think he should be our starting left back at this point for the Euros.
I agree 100%. I don't think Danny Rose has been good enough to be international starter for about 2 or 3 years now, and there's been calls for Chilwell to be in this predicament for a couple of years now himself. I think now he's finally got into the team. I think if he's taken out of it, people are just going to be really upset.
I think the scoreline still doesn't. It's almost, in my opinion, papering over some cracks. I still think that we're not very good under pressure. I think in the 2018 World Cup, players like Maguire were fantastic under pressure, and I still think he probably is in terms of how he handles the ball, playing out from the back, pushing forward. But there were just little signs if you're against a Germany or an Italy or an Argentina, that's not gonna. Then you're not. It's not gonna be as. It's gonna be more punishing than what Kosovo were like.
I think the Euros could be quite a worrying one because we've had quite an easy qualification group. There's not been too many teams that have been able to challenge us very, very well, very competitively. And we've scored the most goals we've ever scored in a qualification stage. So I think, yeah, it looks like we're doing really, really well, but that's only because we've been playing such poor opposition. If we get drawn in a group with someone like Germany in the Euros...
We won't, I'm pretty sure.
I think it's seeded, isn't it?
Is it seeded this time?
Yeah, we're top. We had to win last night to get into the top seed. I think it's still up in question because Netherlands and Germany can both still finish top of their group.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I think it's more likely that Netherlands will, but off the top of my head, I can't remember. Germany are 2 points ahead of them, so a win against
Northern Ireland.
Northern Ireland would secure top seed.
Northern Ireland, who we will touch upon later. Joe's got his notes for that. But I think England obviously had more of the ball. They had better quality chances than Kosovo. And I think they did deal, you know, better than they had done against the likes of Czech Republic from those corners. They had 6 to England's 2. So you could tell that there is a game plan from these sides that, you know, feel that's their way in against the Three Lions. But I was expecting a lot more difficult challenge from Kosovo because they came to St Mary's...
5-3, weren't it?
Yeah, and it was 5-3 in the reverse fixture. And... Yeah, it was 5-0 at half-time to England, but Kosovo should, like, just pounce upon our mistakes and weaknesses. And maybe you could say that we're gelling better now and we're able to snuff out games. But I just don't know if Mings, I know he'll put Stones in. It'll be Stones and Maguire if everyone's fit. But I don't think Mings should be starting or near starting for England. Like, in terms of if we're going to be challenging for Euros, imagine having Mings against someone like Chiellini. You know, the way they line up, or Mings against Ramos, there's clear, you know, discrepancy there.
I think the only place that we would be a bit like one of the big countries in terms of our lineup is our attack. I don't think our midfield's very strong at all.
No.
Like, our strongest midfielder in terms of like all around is Jordan Henderson, and I don't think he's the most technically gifted. I think he's just a hard worker. I think he's quite similar to James Mund. Like, he will just work really hard for the team.
He's decent at all different aspects of the game rather than...
Yeah, he's decent at everything, but he's not amazing at one.
But I do think that he deserves credit for passing as well.
Yeah.
Because I think it's sometimes underrated, but because you've got the likes of Trent and Robertson in Liverpool that do that, but the amount of times, I think isn't it something like... like six long balls a game he completes, which is pretty impressive, and a lot of the time they are quite accurate. You see him just zip it from one side to the other and it gets their game going. Talking about England,
the concern for me though is that we're going to have to go into this Euros with a midfield which is probably going to... we're going to play a 4-3-3 as we always do, and it'll probably be Henderson as the deep lying midfielder, and then probably like Oxlade-Chamberlain, and maybe at the rate he's been going, maybe give someone like Mason Mount a go, but then maybe give Declan Rice a go as well. That's the three-man midfield, and I think compared to a midfield like some like the Netherlands with Frankie de Jong and Gigi Wijnaldum, or you've got... it just compared to that, that's nowhere near as good, and that's just the two people. So like,
I
don't think we're strong. I think that a lot of England fans think that we're a lot stronger than we are.
We'll have to outscore teams.
Yeah, that's pretty much going to have to be it. But that's what we've done in the qualification stage, really.
But again, as we said, weak opposition.
We lost to Czech Republic. I think it was a wake up call. But it's also, how much can you really change in a year? You're going to have the same players at the end of the day. We were shocking against Czech Republic
in the first game.
Our attack
Kosovo
did nothing. That's the issue. The thing we are praising so much against Czech Republic.
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact stats for it, but we literally had like ample amount of chances. Czech Republic dominated us.
They really brought a physical game, and expect the attack to bail us out, but if they're not firing, then the defence really does get, you know, exposed.
Yeah, you've got to look, like, sometimes having a good defence is better than having an amazing offensive. Yeah.
Well, I think the problem is we've conceded quite a few goals in this qualification stage. Like, we conceded 3 to Kosovo in the first leg.
6.
But against teams that aren't very good at all, like, we should be almost in the same predicament as in Italy in this stage, who haven't lost a game yet.
Well, the only thing that England will hope for is that they're only playing the side once over one leg, kind of thing. They're, you know, back themselves to beat anyone. I think, you know, if you've got a fit and firing Sterling, Kane, Rashford, and then you've got the likes of Sancho and Hudson-Odoi to come on, I still think we miss Vardy. I do think that he was a lethal weapon you can use, and he wasn't appreciated enough at the stage, at England's international stage.
Did they play him at the third place playoff in Russia? Because I'm pretty sure did they take him with him to the 2018?
Yeah.
Then he retired as soon as we got back home. He retired.
Yeah, but I thought in this game it made a big impact having Sterling back. Obviously, there was off the field dispute with Gomez, which was kind of created from the game at Anfield last week. But it was Winks who got man of the match, and I thought that, as much as I don't really think there's that much to him, I thought that he had more license to get forward this time, and more than he does at Spurs, because he's usually the one that sits at the base of their midfield with the likes of Ndombele, Sissoko, Lo Celso going forward. And I feel like it did give him the opportunity to showcase more than just being a sideways passer.
Yeah.
But I don't think he should be starting. I don't really think he adds too much, you know, that we had, like, someone like Oxlade-Chamberlain, who's got more, is technically more sound, got a bit more flair as well. I don't really think that, you know, Wink should be starting for us.
Well, he played as a number 8 in this game. He was allowed to roam forward, and obviously he got his goal. I think that's his first goal for England as well.
Yeah.
So he's clearly trying to add that aspect to his game, which we can't really see at Spurs, because he has to play deep, because their midfield is so creative and dynamic that he's not allowed to go that far forward. Yeah. But I agree with you completely. I don't think he should be in the starting 11. I'd even say on the bench, if you're going to bring someone on, he's not the first midfielder you'd want to bring on. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain is a lot better, and I think he's working really well in that central midfield role since he's came off the wing. And he's personally the sort of person I want to see in the team. I think he adds a lot more to a squad than Harry Winks will.
Well, we've got to give credit to Southgate as well for trying these new players, because I know Winks has had, I think, something like 6 caps before, something like that. But, you know, he's not a mainstay, and we did say maybe give some...
Goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean, Pope started, so it was good that he mixed it up. Obviously, he stuck with Pickford against Montenegro. Maybe it would have been nice to see Henderson play as well, give each of them a game.
I really doubted he'd have played. I think in his
but
head he
ideally,
still, yeah.
I think we're all advocates for that, as much as Joe definitely
is.
I
was hoping that Pope would play in the first game and Henderson would play against Kosovo. That was my big wish, but I think, obviously, I think we're big advocates of Dean Henderson on this podcast, all of us, and obviously I think we'd love to see him start as soon as possible, but I think long term he's going to be the next England number one.
And
I think he will be, unless De Gea stays at Man United another season and for some reason Man U don't want to loan him out again. I think if he becomes a bench warmer, I don't think he'll be England's number one, because there's no reason for them to pick him. They can't base it off of form. I know that's not what Southgate's doing at the moment, but let's face it, he's England's number four at the moment, because the only reason he's been picked is because twice Heaton's dropped out.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, it isn't because...
I don't think he's doing himself any disjustice by the way he's playing in the league. So, you know, just continue with it. We haven't got an international break till March. Celebration, lads. So, plenty of time for him to, you know, make his stock rise as well. But shout out to Kane. I know we're not as much advocates on here, but I feel like, you know, he bangs the goals in and he's scoring his successive England game now.
He scored 12 in this calendar year, which is the equal highest ever for an England player.
And another juicy stat, so him scoring in his sixth successive game for England, that's the only second time someone has done it after the war, which Kane also did 2 years ago. Got it out there. But
do you reckon he's going to break Wayne Rooney's scoring record for England?
How many is Rooney on?
Rooney's on 53.
And Kane's on...
Is it 30-something?
Yeah, he's in the 30s now.
I don't see why not. Isn't he 25 to going on 26?
Yeah.
Still got a good 5 years left of him, maybe, you know, at peak performance. Depends how he pans out his play, because he's never been really reliant on pace. As long as he's still, you know, got his shooting boots on, cliche, but like...
I mean, yeah, I think he's fortunate that he isn't just like someone like Jamie Vardy, who somehow he's keeping his pace into mid-30s, but... If Vardy loses his pace, he loses what makes him special.
Yeah.
Whereas Harry Kane is one of the best finishers in the world.
Yeah.
So I think he would be able to still play. And if you build the team around him when he's 33 and he can't run as much, he's still going to get your goals.
I disagree with that. Because
Billy Sharp.
Yeah, exactly. Like, literally, you could say, I know it's different level in terms of Harry Kane and Billy Sharp, but last season when we were against slower players, Billy Sharp was unstoppable. And in the League One, it was the exact same. But when you get to a certain level, not having that pace and being a bit more clumsy on the ball or being just a bit more clumsy in general really affects you. You can't just structure a team around a player who can't run. Like, it isn't going to work.
I get your point.
Like, last thing Billy Sharp did for Sheffield United was get sent off against Southampton. And that's he literally came on and then within 10 minutes was clumsy and ran straight into a Southampton player. And I think the older you get, you can have finishing all you want, but you will get less opportunities to finish when you've not got the pace or not got the precision what Harry Kane has at the moment.
Well, you say that, but then someone like Ricky Lambert, when Southampton first came into the Premier League against incredibly good defenders, he was still their top goal scorer for several seasons and helped keep them in the league for several seasons.
Who else did Southampton have as a goal scorer in threat? Like, as
Gio
like
Rodriguez?
As like a proper goal scorer in threat.
Maybe Lallana, but didn't really get that. Like, but at the end of the day, I think it just depends on the person. Like, on the person. For me, I could see Kane becoming more like a Rooney, where he does drop into attacking midfield, because I think his passing is underrated, and he got an assist in this game as well.
Well, he's been involved in. He's had 5 assists in his past 6 games.
Yeah, so I wouldn't, you know, just say that Kane's just scoring. You know, that's all he can do, just score. Which is still a great feat, but like, there is a lot more to his game, and I feel like that will stand him in good stead for when he does kind of age out a bit.
Yeah.
I just hope that we drop him when we need to. in terms of like,
yeah,
you saw it last year in the Champions League final. He should not have played that game. He was not fit, yet he was still played. You saw it at the weekend with Tottenham. They played him when he 100% was not fit against United, and it really affected him. And I just hope that when he gets to that stage where we have got better strikers or have got better finishes, we don't just go, oh, Harry Kane scored the most England goals ever, so we must play him. Yeah. Like, I really hope
that happened with Wayne Rooney quite a lot towards the end of his career, both for Man
trying
United,
to shoehorn him.
For Man United and for England, especially England. But I think we've got enough strikers right now where if he's injured, we don't even need to play him. Like, someone like Tammy is fitting into the England squad really well. He's getting goals he scored the other night against Montenegro. Like, we've got other players who can play in that position, and if we have to play Rashford up front, we can then put Sancho on out wide as well.
So Sterling's operated number nine spot before. You know, we've got a very
strong attack right now. We just need to actually make sure we use it and don't just rely on Harry Kane, even if he's not 100% fit. Because Harry Kane about 75% isn't good enough, but him at 100%, he's one of the best in the world. So I think I don't want to see him play. I don't want to see us starting players that aren't fit just for the sake of their name, which we do all the time for England.
Yeah, well, obviously England have averaged 3.8 goals per game 2019, so 38 goals in 10 games.
Only one team has ever scored more in terms of England, and that was pre-war, like you said. It was 1908.
And kind of takes me on to the next point, which is England versus Montenegro, which the goal difference boosted by 7 in this one, beating Montenegro 7-0 at Wembley.
But you all said they'd concede, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
I said 4-1.
You and Nathan both said they'd concede.
Kosovo, I said something like 4-2, and then for Montenegro, I think I said like 4-0.
I think I went 4-0 on both.
So you had Oxlade-Chamberlain scoring, you had Harry Kane getting a hat-trick.
In 19 minutes.
Yep, you then had Rashford scoring, and then Tammy Abraham scoring late on. There was also an own goal in the 66th minute.
Yeah. And as I said, instrumental performance from Chilwell, who got that early hat-trick of assists. And I feel like Montenegro didn't like challenge England enough. I know it sounds, well, obviously because it's 7-0, but they gave them too much respect. So when Chilwell got the ball in that sort of dangerous area on the left-hand side, there was nobody really making much effort to close him down. And it kind of felt like, oh, they haven't really done their research and know about his attacking quality. And you let him have that freedom, and then he picks out a player, and that's already 3 goals.
Well, we got a hat trick of assists.
And just that performance for me just pushed him right up to number one left back, as we said, over Rose.
Yeah, I don't think Danny Rose really can. He's never really had that to his game, really, has he? Like he gets a few assists, but I don't think he's never been the sort of player to get 3 in a game, and he's never been the sort of person to be literally dominating the entire pitch. He's usually the one that's getting dominated and having to be sat on the back foot. But I think Chilwell is better defensively and defensively.
Yeah, I was surprised by Montenegro, as I said, because they're not the best technically. There's not really many players that stand out, for a neutral. But I felt like they could have done what Czech Republic did and just utilise a bit of physicality, what Kosovo maybe tried to do from the corners as well. And that would have surely put the wind up England as well, because it might, if it was from the off, they wouldn't have thought that they can just kind of dictate, which they did. And it was quite, even when we scored it was just kind of like, yay. But like, there wasn't great atmosphere, because you're always going to get it in these sort of games where we qualified. It's against little minnows like Montenegro. I mean,
well, yeah. As soon as it was 2-0, shall I say, by the 18th minute, and at that point we already knew we'd qualified. So at this point, all atmosphere from the game had gone, and it was just, let's see how many we can score. And you can clearly see that the game sort of went a bit dead between the 60th minute and the 66th. There's nothing happened between, nothing at all happened at that point. There wasn't even any bookings or anything during the stage. So, I mean, it's just a typical international game for us, isn't it? Like, it's opposition that aren't strong enough, and it's just, we've got to play them to get to the international, to get to the big international tournament.
Well, the win against Montenegro meant that we, and I think Czech Republic lost to Kosovo. They also lost to Bulgaria last night, but over the night before. But it now means that we're top of the group, and then also top seed. So it means that we'll play all of our group games at Wembley.
There we go. Which got to be a bonus.
Yeah, we're in Group D, and hopefully, if we get to the semis or even the final, we'll be at Wembley again. But at least that guarantees three. It'll be the first time since like '96 since we've had like an actual home, international tournament on our soil.
Yeah, and respect to England as well in this one, because we were saying about in the reverse fixture against Kosovo how we were 5-0 up and then they got three easy goals back. In this one, I know we weren't tested as much, the game wasn't brought to us as much, but we rode it out and I think we just dictated it. You know, we were 66% of the ball, 11 shots on target to Montenegro's 2 as well. It was, you can't really ask for much more besides an even greater, battering. But the fact that we didn't concede to me was quite, commendable, I guess. But then Montenegro don't really have too much threat going forward. So it's kind of balances each other out, really. But good that we weren't so naive.
I think we had our strongest defence in this game as well. We started up having Pickford. I mean, everyone knows what I think about Pickford. But we had Trent Alexander-Arnold. We then had John Stones, Maguire and Chilwell. And that's the defence I want to see line up in the Euros, yeah, if everyone's still fully fit.
Mm-hmm. I'm happy with that as well. I mean, Stone, obviously, he hasn't played a lot recently, but...
I'm about to say, I'll tell you what I'd rather have for a defence when we get closer to the Euros. Because yeah.
What about right now?
Like, I'm about to say, at the rate City are going,
yeah,
I don't even know. Like, yeah, Alexander-Arnold, 100%. I can tell you right now, probably, and the way Leicester are going, Chilwell and Alexander-Arnold should definitely be the ones, on Westwood's part there. Should definitely be one starting, but I would contest Stones' position if City keep being leaky at the back. And I'm not meaning they need to concede 30 goals this season for Stones not to be, but they are going to concede a significant more than they conceded last year.
Right now, with the squad, who would you replace them with? Would you put in Tomori? Would you put in Joe Gomez? Or would you put in Tyrone Mings?
Yeah, I think Joe's a bit puzzled because he didn't hear somebody's initials beginning with J-O.
JOC, but yeah, no, we're not going to talk about that because we don't pick this team on form, apparently. I think Tomori's really surprised me. I think he's been really good this season. I don't know if he's right for the England team, and he's probably not as experienced as players like Stones, but I think it would be nice to see. I think them two friendlies, I don't know who they're against in March, but it's really hard to say right now because there's going to be like another 30 games, another 28 games before the Euros, and anything could happen then. Man United could stop conceding goals, or Villa could literally shut up shop and concede five goals in the next 10 games.
Lindelof gets injured, we bring in Axel Tuanzebe, and him and Maguire form the best defensive partnership ever and don't concede at all.
Ah, oh, dreams, theatre dreams of
we would love,
false dreams.
We would love to see it. I'd like to just mention that Rashford's England form's been really good. He's obviously got goals in both games. He seems to have regained his confidence that he lost.
Shame it'll be put back down for the coming weekend. But.
Well, I mean, next Monday we'll hear one of us singing, one of us probably very upset, and I think it's the ginger one that's going to be a bit upset.
Oh. I'll probably be upset because I support my home team instead of supporting a plastic fan team.
Everyone knows why I support Man United. This is all my dad's fault, and I had no say in this. And I'm not going to be a real plastic fan and change my club midway through my life.
Doesn't your brother support Leicester?
Yeah, that's so because he's got. So that was because mum was straight onto that one. Dad had me in a tracksuit by the age of about 3 days, mate. I'm not the sort of guy to change my club midway through my life.
So if Westwood doesn't turn up next week, you guys probably know why. Might have hit him hard. But we also want to shine the spotlight on some other teams in the European qualifiers. For me, I've done Turkey, so I'll start with them. So they've won. They won three games in 2018 after failing to get to the World Cup that year. And had very little talent coming through. So they went into Group H of the Euro qualifiers. We saw them a group with Iceland, France, Albania, Andorra and Moldova. So we've seen the team that might battle with Iceland for second place. And they did just that. So they they finished with 3 points ahead of Iceland. France were 2 points ahead. And they actually beat France and drew with them.
I say the actual results which got Turkey in it weren't even they lost to Iceland and drew with Iceland. It was a win against France which really sealed it for them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was the third game and it continued a dream start because they already picked up two wins, against, I think it was Andorra and Moldova. But Turkey, as I said, weren't in the greatest place when it came to their footballing side, the national side. I mean, the league's not really pulling up trees as well. And when they went and beat France at home,
and it was a full strength French squad. Yeah, it wasn't like
yeah, Griezmann, Umtiti,
Mbappe.
Yeah, Pogba, and Pogba was actually at fault for, I think it was the second goal from Turkey. So he was caught just messing around with it on the edge of his box. Sometimes, which he does do when he thinks he has too much time, a little bit too casual. Great player anyway. But yeah, they caught him napping, slipped a player in, and then they scored. And what Turkey did really well, which I think if England were to go up against them, which they struggle about, is the set pieces. So they utilised set pieces really well. So in this game, they actually scored in the reverse fixture, sorry, at the Stade de France. They actually scored from a free kick after just like a few minutes after Giroud came on and scored for France. they finished second on 23 points with just losing one game. And say they didn't
conceded
lose...
Conceded three as well.
Yeah, yeah. And the main man that I think they need to rely on is Cengiz Under. Don't know if you guys have
so good.
Heard of him, yeah? Used to play for Roma, I believe. He might even still be there now. But I think he went to Celta Vigo, so he might be there. And I've known about him for quite a while and never really got his career up and running when he went to Roma. So I think he did take the move, you know, move to Spain, Celta Vigo. But his delivery in some of these games, that's what's going to be essential for them. And then even in the game against France in the return the return fixture, it was Çalhanoğlu, who we've probably all quite aware of if you bash FIFA years back. And his set pieces, you know, just sublime. And for their goals, that's gonna be the way in for them. And I think that a side like England, if France are getting caused, you know, issues, I think we're going to get caused issues. So you won't want to come up against Turkey and, I mean, they might well do as well, finishing in second.
Chance,
yeah. You know,
to be fair, I'd take Turkey over Portugal.
Of course, yeah.
Because like, Portugal are also, I think Turkey and Portugal will be in the same pot, I imagine.
Mm. Well, in the reverse fixture in France, they were largely dominated. But they're I don't know how to say this name, actually. Başakşehir. It's a Turkish side, anyway. The goalkeeper, Mert Genok, was to thank for some great saves. And like I said, they went down the 76th minute, which they could have, you know, they could have dropped their heads. And it was a good header from Giroud as well. Now, I did think that they rode their luck just before that. They had a penalty shout for the player handling it. And it was a handball, if we're going off the new law, which we've kind of berated. But scored from a resulting corner after Griezmann whipped in. But they show like real fight, and I like that. And I feel like, you know, we kind of associate with Turkey with having that passion. And I think they've translated that into the football as well. And another big player who I think will be very influential for them at the Euros is Soyuncu from Leicester. Like, having one of the greatest young talents defensively in the side is going to do the world of good for any team, especially for a team like Turkey, who aren't blessed with young talent like England or like your Germanys and that. And I really think that they could be a wild card at the Euros. So they've got, obviously, under Çalhanoğlu and Soyuncu as well. And I just think that they're happy to keep it simple. And the real focal point for them, absolute throwback as well, is still Burak Yilmaz.
I think that they're the sort of team that's going to cause a squad like England a lot of problems, because they will play it so direct and they will just sit back, wait for set pieces and then try and capitalise on everything.
It will literally, if we were to play them, I think it could pan out literally like it did when we played Iceland at the Euros. They are, like, from what I've seen of Turkey, it's very similar, where they utilise what they know they are very good at in a very good way. And they don't try and do anything too fancy. They think, we've got a free kick here, let's make the most of this, and don't just kind of like knock it about. And then, you know, sometimes you've got to go direct, and I think that they're not afraid to do that. But then they've also got the quality of under Çalhanoğlu as well. So are you guys looking forward to seeing them at the Euros? Because I think it'll be good to have them back in the fold.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I think whilst they're not the easiest, I think they'll be either in the second or third pot. I don't know exactly how it works. I'd like to take our chances against Turkey as opposed to Portugal. But
yeah,
still, there will be easier seeds to come up against.
I think teams like Finland sort of will be a lot easier to play than a team like Turkey. I think Turkey have a lot more about them. I mean, not to try and sound horrible, I do think Finland are sort of a one-man country at this rate, with Timo Pukki sort of carrying them through qualification. So I'd hope to be drawn against teams like those. And if we do get a team like Turkey, knowing our luck on the national stage in the last several decades, really, I'm going to be quite concerned.
Well, the good news is, just looking on UEFA's website, the way they've done the groups this time, because you know how the Euro has been held in multiple countries, yeah. certain teams have to be in a certain group, no matter where, which seed they finish. So although Germany are probably going to win their group, we can't be with Holland. Holland have to be in Group C, whereas we have to be in Group D. And it's same if Scotland qualify through playoffs, we are guaranteed to have Scotland in our group. And then there's a couple more like Spain, Russia, Denmark and Italy all can't be in our group because there's only six top seeds. So I don't know exactly because there's like, is there 10, I think, qualifying groups?
Yeah, there is. Up to I think. So.
Yeah, or J, I think.
Yeah, it might be. Just as long as we don't get Scotland, because I don't want a repeat of Lee Griffiths when he scored back-to-back free kicks.
I know that we will lose to Scotland. We will
John McGinn's going to have a blind
one. Scotland
have
to qualify through playoffs, obviously, and I don't think Scotland's players want it enough, in my opinion. I think too many players, like, I think it will be disgusting if players like McTominay and players like that suddenly, when it comes to the qualification process, suddenly want to play again because they've not wanted to play for the past couple of games. They've always been, out with injury or out with this. Like,
McTominay genuinely is injured though right now.
Yeah, but there's so many other players in the Premier League.
Robertson,
John Fleck on the bench, and then they want to start players who don't want to play for their country.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. Like, I think it's.
We're probably doing that now though with England as well.
Who? Like,
as in,
how they turn into this, player, I have no clue.
If you've got a young player, like, I think the younger players or players that have only just started to get call-ups always want to play more than like players that have been playing on a national stage for like a decade. Like, you'll probably see a bit more effort from someone like a Mason Mount than you will from a Jordan Henderson.
I'm not on about effort though. I'm on about
in general
full out dropping from a team. The only players in the England team who've gone home early this international break was Gomez, who was apparently injured, and then Henderson. So you can even say it's because it's Liverpool and they've got a lot of games in December, or you can just say, probably injury.
A lot of Liverpool players have pulled out.
Well, Robertson from Scotland as well, so it does...
I think Robertson may have pulled out from the last international break as well, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but anyway, that was my sort of little talk about Turkey. Joe, do you want to hit us next?
Yeah, I had decided to do Republic of Ireland. Northern Ireland, sorry. And this was before they drew against Holland on Saturday, I think it was, which was a bit unfortunate. They probably deserved to get something out of it. Their captain, Steve.
Steve Davis.
Yeah.
There we go.
Mr. Penalty. It was a shocking penalty. It was terrible. He blasted it. Well, I'm not saying I could do better, but he did blast it miles over the bar. He put a bit too much power on it, is how I'd like to say it. And it's a bit unfortunate because they've been quite surprising in qualifying. They were drawn into a group with Germany and Holland, and Belarus and Estonia. So when everyone saw that group, they instantly thought, okay, playoffs. That's where you're going to be. You're probably going to get maybe 10 points, get results against Belarus and Estonia, and maybe grind out a couple of draws here and there. But they've put on a valiant show against Germany and Netherlands. They've drawn against. They've drawn against Holland, obviously, at home, and then they also were leading in Holland up until about the 80th minute, which, again, I think it was just maybe, I don't know if it was travel or it's just tired legs or something, but they just kind of caved in on themselves. Germany, they had a 2-0 loss too, but at the end of the day, like, you can't win them all. You've seen at least Northern Ireland are losing to Germany as opposed to losing to... Czech Republic.
Well, I think there's only a certain amount, what you're saying there's only a certain amount of team spirit can carry you through.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you just need that little bit of extra quality, which England do have, but this Northern Irish team seem very well like
their top scorer is McGuinness.
Yeah.
One of the issues you could argue they've had in qualifying is definitely scoring goals. They've only conceded 7, which from the teams in their group is quite decent, especially bear in mind you've got like recent World Cup champions and World Cup runners up, or
they're going to be in the mix at the Euros.
Yeah,
Netherlands are,
but they've only scored 8, again against teams like Belarus and Estonia, where you're picking up easy wins, you might be looking to try and push out bigger wins than maybe 2-0. I think as you said, there's only so much team spirit can get you, and I think that. From a defensive standpoint, they're quite tight-knit, but I think they could definitely... I just don't think they've got the skill up front to actually score like obviously I know we've had an easier draw, but 7 goals a game or 5 goals a game, and I know in the Euros that's not going to make a difference. Let's face it, we're not going to win a game 7-0, but it's always good to have that little bit of skill up front.
And I think that Northern Ireland, and I think Michael O'Neill deserves a lot of credit, as we spoke about him, because he's going to Stoke when the campaign's done, or if they get to the Euros, he's going to continue. But there's, you know,
he's turned them around already, hasn't he?
Yeah, and if you look at it as well, Northern Ireland on paper compared to somebody like England, they're McGuinness, and I think it's Connor Washington who also plays them as well, none of them are in the Premier League, especially in the forward area. Davis, obviously very good for Southampton, now applying his trade in Scotland with Rangers. The only real top quality sort of player I'd say they have on paper is Johnny Evans. So team spirit for them is what kind of keeps them cohesive.
And they could be. I think they should breeze through playoffs, in my opinion. I don't know who else they're playing in playoffs. It'll probably be Scotland. But from
that'll
there,
be a good game.
Go on, man. Westwood, he's laughing. He's like, they'll breeze through it.
But don't know what they've got. Yeah. Just that sentence
but,
made me chuckle.
But my point is that I believe that the way they've been playing, it ain't going to matter who they come up against.
I agree with you.
It's like, I think they'll qualify, and who knows, mate. I was about to say maybe they'll do what Wales did last Euros and got to the semis. Mm. I don't know if they can do that, but I think they should be looking to definitely get out of their group, as long as it's not obviously the group of death. But they've proven they can go up against Titans and still
give valiant effort.
Yeah,
yeah.
Grind out a result.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye out for that one. And Adam, who did you do?
So originally I was going to look at Portugal or Russia was who I was thinking, but then Nathan Hardinger was vacant today. So I've decided to take his team that he was doing. I've decided to look at Italy because they've destroyed qualification, and considering they couldn't even qualify for the World Cup 2 years ago, well, a year and a half ago now, it's quite amazing. So in the 9 games they've played, they've won all of them. They're currently sat on 27 points and they've got 1 game left tonight, and they are currently 9 points ahead of Finland, who have qualified in second place. They've only conceded 3 goals all qualification, and they've had so many different goal scorers and they've played so many different lineups. It's not just, there's just a massive amount of quality throughout the entire team. So in the game this on Friday against Bosnia and Herzegovina, there was a Serbi, the centre-back, Insigne and Belotti who scored for them. Whereas then, a couple of weeks ago against Liechtenstein, you had Belotti getting 2, but then you also had Benedeschi on the score sheet. A lot of their attackers across the board are all performing. At the very, very beginning of qualification, they had Moise Keane getting a few on the score sheet. They've also had Quagliarella on the score sheet a lot.
He's still playing.
Still playing internationally, still banging goals in.
Yeah. Well, what about the defence then? Because did Chiellini retire from international football? I'm guessing Bonucci's still going to be around. Serbi playing for Lazio as well, isn't he?
So they lined up against Bosnia the other day with Serbi and Bonucci together, and they played a back four and had Emerson Florenzi on fullback at the fullbacks and
solid.
Started Donnarumma in goal.
It's a good
and
side.
I think that's what they've done a lot throughout qualification. They've played that straight back four. They've also played Romagnoli a lot, and they played Mancini as well at centre-back in the games that are a little bit less important against Liechtenstein. That's who they played. But they've been experimenting with the entire team as a whole. They've played Sirigu in net a few times as well. Belotti and Benedeschi have really shone, as well as Jorginho, throughout their entire qualification.
And what sort of formation do they usually opt for? So if we're coming up against them, we need to kind of like think...
entire way through qualification, even if they're a rotating squad, they've played a 4-3-3. With a flat midfield. Usually it's Jorginho as the centrepiece, and they'll usually play Verratti as well defensively, but they seem to be playing this against every single club they've played against, but they're doing very, very well with it. They've played Barrera a lot as the third man in midfield. For the main, against in their most tough games, they've played Belotti, Benedeschi and Chiesa quite a lot, and they've worked really well. A lot of them have been getting either goals or assists for them the entire way through the tournament, and it's just really interesting to see them doing so well considering they couldn't qualify for the World Cup, and they didn't do amazing in the Euros, in the last Euros, and now to see the turnaround and how they're looking like they could be the favourites already because of their amazing record, and they've not conceded. They've only conceded 3-9.
Would you say that Mancini, since he's come in, has put his stamp on the side? Is there a certain way they're playing? You know, is it quite direct, or you know, they've got good technical players like Insigne and Chiesa, Bernardeschi. Is it quite an attacking sort of way of football? Or
it seems to be, from looking statistically, because I'll be honest, I've not watched every single Italy game during
the We'd expect Nathan would. But
Nathan obviously would have, because Jorginho and Emerson, he has to look out for his boys. But it seems to be quite a direct style of football, and they seem to be playing a lot of counter-attacks. They've not they're not always dominating statistically. So a lot of the times there'll be teams that have similar amounts of shots, or they'll have less shots than their opposition, but they're still scoring, they're still having more passes. So it seems like they are trying to play on the counter-attack. They'll let teams press them and then take advantage with the pace they've got up front.
I think it's a bit too early to rule them as Euro favourites. I think it's very hard to predict Euro favourite or favourites for a competition based on qualifying, because unless you're drawn into a group where you're playing high-level opposition, let's face it, they've played Finland. That's Finland and Greece, arguably, but let's face it, you've said it yourself, Finland are a one-man team. You suppress Pukki, you're fine. I don't think you can really, based on their performances at previous tournaments, or not being at previous tournaments, I would say until I see them perform against a bigger team, like let's say if they get drawn against Portugal or something, that's when we can start ruling them as favourites. And it's not just them. Like, Belgium have only conceded two, but they've had Russia in their group, and that's it. Scotland, but let's face it, Scotland really aren't that much of a threat. Like, it's hard to really... There's only one group which has had two, arguably, like, big teams in. Well, there's a couple. But yeah, there's also, like, the Ukraine-Portugal one.
Yeah.
Which Ukraine have been quite a surprise.
But yeah,
like,
that's what I mean. We didn't really expect Ukraine to take off as they did.
And top it as well.
Yeah, Yarmolenko obviously playing very well. And Konoplyanka. And Yaremchuk as well. But... like, for me, it's a good point that you made earlier, Joe, which England are lacking in, is that the defence isn't really too solid. And Italy have always been, whether it's the Italian league or the national side as well, they've always been built upon a solid defence, and it's quite defensive football. And, you know, if, I know, as we said, it's not the most challenging group, but they can only play what's in front of them. Mm-hmm. And maybe with some friendlies against tougher opposition, that might we might be able to gauge them better into the Euros.
I think the thing comparing Italy to us is the experience they've got is a lot better than the experience we've got. So obviously a Serbian Bonucci is an established centre-back partnership for the country is amazing.
Midfield as well.
Whereas we've got like...
our fullbacks are better, I'd say.
Yeah, I think fullbacks are better because, I mean, Emerson's not bad. And I think Florenzi's really good. But
Florenzi...
he used to be a winger and he's been pulled back by Roma and he's stayed there for a couple of seasons now. And his defending has always been decent, but it's never been the best part of his game.
Their midfield, for me, is what would be able to beat us, because Jorginho and Verratti, just those two alone, we've got the likes of Barella as well, who's really impressed me at Inter Milan. It's not a bad lineup, is it? I think Stefano Sensi as well from Inter is probably in the squad.
He's doing really well for them. The thing is, they've got options. Like, they've not even... in the game against Liechtenstein, they didn't even play Jorginho. He was just on the bench the entire game. They didn't even bother with it.
And they've also got the likes, you know, good young talent like Zaniolo from Roma, who we haven't even spoken about.
I think the biggest issue is with Italy as well in terms of predicting and stuff and seeing how they are. We haven't seen them perform a big tournament in 3 years, and their back line has not changed awfully that much.
No.
So you can't really, like, that back line was the back line which didn't get them qualified through the World Cup. And I think they had Spain in their World Cup group, and other than that, they didn't really have many strong teams that they didn't qualify.
They're in a similar... well, they set up in the exact same formation that we do for England, but I think where we think our attack's amazing, and it could beat teams, their attack's a little bit worse, but everything else on the pitch is better, I'd say. And they've got a better keeper, and obviously we've got Pickford as our main, and they've got Donnarumma, who I think is probably the best young keeper in the world. Their main centre-back partnership is better. Yes, we've got better full-backs, and I think, yes, we've got a better number nine and better wingers. But I think they're not that far behind. Like, Lorenzo Insigne is one of the standouts in Europe for the last couple of seasons. Bernardeschi keeps, like, he's getting more and more game time.
Yeah, and Chiesa has really taken off well at Fiorentina.
And then as well, they've then got Belotti, and then they've got Ciro Immobile, and then if they want to bring him in, they've got Quagliarella, they've got Moise Kean,
Balotelli, if they really want.
There's so many good attackers that they can bring in. Whereas for us, for England, it's like, if Harry Kane's not starting, we're going to probably have to push a winger into strike. We're going to have to push Rashford or Sterling in, or play Tammy Abraham, who's not as experienced as the rest of them. That's where I think they're going to capitalise and do really well in this tournament. And then when you've got midfield generals like Jorginho and Verratti holding it down, and then someone like Sensi, who can be a bit of a wild card and do what he wants, their starting 11 is really, really strong. And they're going to be able, I think they're going to do well in this tournament. I think they're playing such a good brand of football. Yes, it's obviously not against amazing opposition, but I think they are one of the teams to look out for so far in the Euros.
I'll keep an eye out for Donnarumma as well. It's been massive hype over him for probably about 4 years now. This is going to be his main shot at, you know, nailing on that starting berth, because Buffon's no longer around. really time for him to step up. We're going to move on to a new section. It's called Continental Conversation. Bit of a mouthful, but we'll roll with it. What the aim is we pick out a team from Europe who surprised us for either a positive reason or a negative reason. And I'm going to go back to Adam Westwood, if you want to take this one.
I would love to start off. I'm going to start off with Borussia Mönchengladbach. They're currently sat on top of the Bundesliga. They're currently 4 points ahead of RB Leipzig, who are behind with 21. They've won every game, this season so far. They've won all 8 games they've taken the lead in. And they're just performing above and beyond what other teams like Dortmund and Bayern are struggling. There's not been one specific standout goal scorer for them as well, when I was doing some more research onto them. So they've had four different scorers, all with more than 3 goals. So Marcus Thurman, Asana has 5. Asana plays 4 with Patrick Herrmann. And then new signing Breel Mbolo has got 3 for them. And they're just performing, they're performing average among around the board, but they're grinding out a lot of results. They've been getting a lot of 2-0s or 3-1s a lot of the time against tougher opposition, and they're still doing so well. I think they are yet to play a few of the bigger teams, such as Dortmund in the league and Bayern in the league. So as soon as we see those teams, it might be a bit of a different story. But they have really capitalised while Dortmund and Bayern have struggled in the last few weeks.
Dortmund beat them. Dortmund beat him 1-0. They beat him in the cup, but they also beat him in the league.
I saw the one in the cup. So yeah, they have struggled, and they are less experienced, and they've lost one of their best players this season before in Thorgan Hazard to Dortmund.
Yeah.
So they're doing really well because there is teams struggling around them. So I don't think that they're going to be in this position come the end of the season. But it is quite amazing to see a team that haven't really been known for finishing at the very top half, the very top third of the table, doing this well this so far into the season.
Looking just purely at results, obviously I haven't done as much research as you, it does look purely like they are capitalising on other teams around them not doing so well, because they've lost to Dortmund and Leipzig. They're the two losses they've had this season. And I imagine when they play Bayern, it'd probably be a similar story.
Lewandowski's
form. I think the second that Bayern and Leipzig start performing as you said, Lewandowski's already performing.
They do play Bayern on the 7th of December, so they've got about 2-3 weeks away.
I don't think they'll hold on to that number one spot.
No, but I've been really impressed by Marcus Thuram, who they signed in the summer from Gangomp. I think they paid $8.5 million for him, and he's kind of helped fill the void that was left by Hazard. Him and Alassane Player as well, who they signed from Nice last year, have been really impressive. And also you add into the mix Mbolo, who I've been wanting him to do really well for so long, and going
when
to Schalke, it just didn't work out.
When he first joined Schalke from Zurich,
it was Basel.
That's the one. He was looking like he was going to be one of Europe's next big talents, and it never really worked with Schalke. I mean, he's doing all right. He's got 3 goals so far this season, but I don't think he's starting every single game, so that's not bad at all.
Well, he was going back to Schalke as well. The last couple of seasons, I think it was last season, really, it was quite a low one for them. They were close to relegation. I think they finished 15th, which by their standards is not good enough. And they have started better this year, but obviously, Pastis new at Mönchengladbach seems to be doing the world of good for him. And, with him being about 22 now, he'll really want to kickstart his career. And I feel like that, a front three of Mbolo, Player, and Thuram is one that you won't really want to come up against. And I think another big player that they lost as well was the central midfielder Cuisance, who went to Bayern. It was one that went under the radar. I think he went for about 20 million or 25 million. Quite a good technical player, very good passer and dribbler. And taking him and Hazard out of your team takes a lot of your creativity out as well. That's what happens.
One thing that they were really lucky is that no one came in for Jan Sommer, their goalkeeper. This season, he's not been in the most amazing form. He's only kept 3 clean sheets in 11. But even so, he is such a leader for them, and he's such an integral part of the club. If he'd have left, if some club had gone in for him, because I know he's a bit older, but he's one of the more experienced goalkeepers around Europe nowadays, that would have been a big loss for them. So keeping a hold of him has really helped them.
Yeah. And the ever-present Matthias Ginter as well, obviously formerly of Borussia Dortmund.
I'm a big fan of Ginter. I think he's really good.
Yeah, and he's quite adaptable as well, so he can fill multiple different positions. But he does usually start centre-back with Nico Olvedi as well, who's a very good player. And what about the fullbacks? Are they still relying on Vent, the Swedish left back?
Yeah.
And I think they still play Janschke as well at right back, who's kind of like a makeshift right back come centre back, which would worry me a bit. But who is it they have? There's a Swiss right back, I think they have. I cannot remember his name.
Is it Leitner?
Leitner, that's
Stefan
it.
Stefan Leitner.
Yeah.
He's Austrian.
Austrian. Close enough. Yeah, but but that's the only thing that I'd worry about if I was Mönchengladbach fullback. And when you've got Gnabry and Koeman potentially in, you know, the next few weeks, and Coutinho chipping in as well, this is probably where they're getting exploited from. Against Dortmund in the cup, I saw the highlights of it, and it was Brandt that was finding himself in quite a lot of space, and it seems to be coming from the wings as well. So that might be to their detriment if they don't toughen up at fullback.
I think overall they've got a very strong team to finish in the Europa League stages, as they usually do. They're currently in the Europa League right now, and they're doing okay. It looks like they might qualify, but it's going to be a push to try and get there. But they have got a lot of quality in their team. They've got players like Christoph Kramer, as you might remember from the World Cup final, where he got knocked out. Doesn't remember what happened in the final. And as well as Dennis Zakaria.
Very good.
Very good. And he's been linked to Man United, to Arsenal, to Liverpool this season. So looks like someone's going to be going snooping around him. So if he can stay through January, it looks like they might try and be able to try and push for Champions League for the first time in a while.
Where are you predicting they finish then, come end of the season? Or should we do how they'll look going into the winter break?
Because they get a winter break in January.
And that might tell us more of an accurate story.
Going into winter, they should be looking to still be in the top four. I think Leipzig are going to overtake them in the next couple of weeks, because Mönchengladbach face Bayern in two weeks' time. I think that's probably going to be a draw if they can keep a hold of Lewandowski. But if Lewandowski can get out, then it's going to be a destroying.
Well, the thing that they'll be resting their laurels on, Mönchengladbach, is that Bayern kind of hit some sort of burnout with the Champions League, obviously clogging up more, you know, fixture space. They're going to hope that's what happens. But Bayern do have enough quality to turn Mönchengladbach over, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I think, like I said, those wings are going to get exploited.
I think there is a lot of big clubs currently in the Bundesliga struggling. So Bayer Leverkusen is sat in 8th place, Frankfurt are in 9th, Schalke in 7th, Dortmund in 6th. The top four currently is Mönchengladbach, Leipzig, Bayern and Freiburg, with Hoffenheim in 5th. So,
but look how narrow it is points difference between...
So currently Leipzig, Bayern and Freiburg are all on 21 points. Hoffenheim are on 20. Dortmund and Schalke are on 19 and Leverkusen are on 18. So literally two games slipping up and Leverkusen could be out of the top four.
I found that a lot in a lot of leagues this year, that in Spain as well, nobody's really taking it by the horn and running with it. In that one, there's obviously like a four-way battle, including Sevilla and the big three Spanish teams as well. But yeah, it's a bit unusual. You've obviously still got PSG that are dominating, and Liverpool are kind of running away with the Premier League at the minute as well. But it's not that set in stone as well in Italy as well, because Inter on Juve's tail.
For me though, as much as I'd love to see Mönchengladbach win the league and keep this going, I think that it is Leipzig's year to win the league.
Do you?
I think yeah.
I'd love to see that, because I'm a big Leipzig fan. I know they kind of poach players from the Red Bull franchise, but I just love how they transform these players, you know, likes of Yusuf Poulsen.
I think because we all know it's going to be Timo Werner's last season. The second it's January the 1st, he's going to announce he's going to either Dortmund or go to
Bayern,
Dortmund, Bayern, or maybe a bigger club in Europe,
maybe Barcelona.
Yeah, I think everyone's thinking it's going to be Bayern, because obviously Lewandowski's starting to reach his peak,
and because Bayern usually has poached the
exactly they the love best a, they love a free German. Transfer
him, and you could see him and Kai Havertz there, you know, in a couple of years.
Don't
but,
say that.
But I'm going to predict going into winter break they'll be in third, and finishing the season they're going to be fourth.
That's I think the exact same.
Yeah. I'm going to move on to PSV. It's a little bit more of a rogue
sad
shout
story.
Well, yeah, and it's more out there, you know. So they had a really positive start to the season, as they qualified for the Europa League with a 7-0 aggregate win over Apollon Limassol of Cyprus. This form continued into Eredivisie as they scored 14 in 4 games, and then went to draw 1-1 at home to Ajax, which is, you know, commendable. Marlon, Daniel Marlon, I know Westwood's heard of him from FIFA. He was on fire at the start of the season. He got 5 goals in a 5-0 win versus Vitesse, and he still leads the scoring chart by 2. But the main issue which has seen them drop off and which I've noticed is they've got a lack of goals from elsewhere. The midfield isn't chipping in, the wingers aren't chipping in, and the main issue really is that Bayewine, the very good winger, and Marlon have been injured for about a month and still are only just coming back to training now. So they've got to hope that after the international break they can kick start again and really chase down the 12-point gap.
How is their defence doing? Just looking at the league, they've conceded like double what their title race contenders have.
No, they started off pretty sound in defence, really. A few clean sheets. And now, recently, they've taken some heavy defeats to the likes of AZ Alkmaar, where they got 2 men sent off. And also, I think it was to Utrecht as well, or Twente. It might have been Twente. They got another red card, and I think they conceded 3 as well. So I think there's already like 7 goals in those 2 games. And their form in the Europa League has kind of dropped as well. They got beaten. Where was it? Oh, that's it. So some Austrian team, which I've never heard of, LASK.
LASK.
Yeah, we'll call it LASK just for, you know, sake of ease. But they lost 4-1, I think, in that one, and they conceded 30 shots. 30 shots to any team is, you know,
diabolical.
Yeah, and I think it was about 15 on target as well. Now, that's a deserved loss, in my opinion. You know, you can't really debate that. And the main thing that I think that they are missing is Chucky. Yep, the Mexican little man, Irving Lozano, who obviously departed for Napoli for around 40 million in the summer. And what he did really well when it was him, Bayewine, and Luke de Jong up front, I think it was.
Yeah, it was Luke de Jong.
Obviously, the two little lads on the wings really did complement the big forward, like target man. They've now operating with a bit of a shorter player, Marlon, who's got a lot more pace than De Jong ever had. Very good player Marlon is, but I feel like the wingers aren't contributing enough, and they brought in Bruma from Leipzig, who was surplus to requirements there, formerly of Galatasaray.
Yep.
And for me, he hasn't been up to the same, you know, up to scratch. And also the likes of Gaston Pereira as well, who usually operates in a 4-3-3 just behind the attacker, with the likes of Hendricks in midfield as well. I don't know, it's just, you look at the scoring charts and it's just filled with the likes of Ajax players like Ziyech and Tadic. And I was looking down and I think it was in the top 15 or something. It was literally just Marlon. Yeah, top, which is great with 10 goals. But there's no one really like getting up there supporting him. And when you think, you know, you lose him and Bayewine and that's your forward line goes missing, as we've seen. And then your defence starts getting really leaky.
I was really excited before the season started to see how Ritsu Doan was going to do. He's a Japanese talent they signed in the summer. But currently in 10 games, he's only got 2 goals and he's got no assists and he's got a yellow card. That's his statistics. They decided for a few games to push Bayewine centrally and have him behind Marlon, which was working really well before they were both injured. And they played Doan on the wing, but it wasn't really doing very well for them, and it was more Bruma having to do the work on the wing and him just sort of being lost.
Yeah, and I think it's quite a lot to ask when somebody's trying to adapt to the league, so it's not the most difficult league. Sorry, Luke, but, you know, it's not. And
the thing is, he's a PSV fan as well.
Yeah, I'm just trying a bit of spotlight.
He's a Man United fan as well, to be fair, so I don't think he's got the best choice in form teams.
I'd go Ajax, mate, to be fair. Yeah. But, you know,
I think that's a bit of a cop-out, though, isn't it? It's like their city. It's like, just pick the team or win.
But, yeah, Ajax obviously have that 12-point gap now, and you know,
they may as well give them the trophy now.
It's worrying because usually those, whenever I check the Eredivisie in previous years, it's always those two locking horns at the top, and it really is competitive. This one's just, I don't know, it's just, and I feel bad for PSV as well because they started off so well, as I said, and the hype around Marlon as well was just insane, and now it has literally been about 3 games which has seen them drop to third. They're not even second. It's AZ Alkmaar, who they're 4 points behind.
Yeah, they're 5 points behind.
So even more damning. But, like, I think this is what the issue is in the Eredivisie. It's not that competitive. So if the best team don't slip up, you're already, you know, you are already in dire trouble if you're trying to challenge for that title.
The thing is, Ajax's squad, even though they've lost They lost Frankie de Jong and they lost Matthijs de Ligt. Their squad is still so strong.
Yeah.
Like, currently, I've just looked at the the lineup from their last game. They played Veltman and Blind together at centre back. Donny van de Beek, Ziyech, and Martinez through the midfield. Then had Labiad, Quincy Promes, and Tadic. That six man attack is just not fair.
Yeah, and then you've got likes of Neres, who's not even included in that discussion. So, for me, PSV just don't have enough like quality, like, and even in depth. Like, I just think that Ajax's starting 11 is way better. Plus, their squad just isn't deep enough, and Ajax to have somebody like Neres on the bench is that little bit of quality which will give you the win in the league, and it'll be nice to see Ajax go far in the Champions League. Obviously, not to Chelsea's downfall, because we want them to go through, don't we, boys? But we saw the quality they had against us. So PSV obviously need Bayern and Marlon to rush back and really start banging in the goals again to chase down that, you know, that feat that they've got. So yeah, hope you enjoyed this one.
Hopefully Nathan will be back next week.
Yeah, we do hope. We're all very tired.
It's my first little bit of sports sit down / drop ball. Facts here. It's now only me who's not missed a podcast.
You nearly did this morning, though, you said.
I nearly did, but some of us were working till 2 o'clock in the morning, so it's a bit hard.
Well, come on, boys. Let's stay together in this one. It's sublime stats from Joe.
But Nathan had yet to miss a podcast from January 2019 to now, and
one whole year, and he's failed us now.
Yeah, he hasn't even done a full year of podcasts. Mm. And the boy wants to be a podcaster.
You hate
just outed him there, but hope you did enjoy, Nathan. I'm sure you enjoyed this one.
Yeah. Thanks for editing it, Nathan.
I think we should. I'm going to let Nathan edit this one. Usually it's me that does it, but I'm going to give it back to Nathan. Let him have a go because he wasn't here.
I'm going to let him have it. It's his 18th, so I'll let him have it.
All right, let's scrap, boys. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week for episode 9.
I'll see you later.
It is now. It's four.